Tonight, our 10-minute speaker is Celia M. from National City.
Hello, I'm Cecilia. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 16th, 1995. My home group's the Great Fat Group, on Thursday nights at 8 on Water Street in La Mesa. Thank you. No. Get out of it, huh? Oh, gosh. Okay, my story. I just liked the taste of alcohol from a really young age. I can remember climbing on my dad's lap and drinking his beer and sticking my finger in the shot glass and sucking on that, and it tasted nice and hot and felt good going down. And then I figured out if I went outside and turned around real fast and fell down, the world went crazy. It spinned, you know. So there I am at 3-4 years of age altering my reality, you know, and I liked it. And I think I stole my first beer. I was about 8. And my dad had a little ice chest when he was out in the garden, and these cute little 4-ounce Coors. And I took one. Well, I was with a little friend from the neighborhood, and she's like, "Oh, you can't do that." And so I just put it back and went back later and took it and drank it. And I was always getting into the wine in the cupboard. I guess it was cooking sherry, you know, different brands. Some were salty. Some taste better. You know, I like the Manischewitz a lot. So, and I didn't really think much of it. It's what I like to do. So I did it. And as I got older, I was brought up in a real strict Catholic family, and, you know, a lot of rules and a lot of perfectionism, and, you know, it was just kind of straight-laced and everything. And so I had, like, two personalities. I was my little drinker personality, and then there was a kid that was a good kid at school and everything, and people couldn't reconcile them. And I started drinking in the neighborhood with the kids at about 13. And they just would be blown away because there I was, you know, the good kid down the street, and there I'm drinking beer with the rest of them. And, you know, I just kind of went through my teen years. I did well in school, but I was always kind of bored, so I drank. And I don't know, I just, there was, it just didn't matter. For some reason, it was like there were no consequences yet. You know, I remember taking a friend of mine, you know, my thing, we'd go down to TJ after school, after high school, and have margaritas. You know, and I think about that now, and it's like, that's nuts, you know, but, you know, that's what we did. And I took her down for her 18th birthday, and I said, you know, oh, gosh, you know, this is so great. You know, I was sitting in this Mexican restaurant, and I had my elbow on the side of the table, and she's like, "Oh, I'm not going to be able to finish this." And I'm like, "Oh, that's okay. I'll finish yours too. The big fishbowl margaritas." And I said, "I know how to hold my liquor, you know." And it's like, I don't know. Being naive is like has its points because, I didn't know how much trouble we could have gotten into for one thing. And these two little girls and TJ, and we could have been kidnapped or something. Who knows? But I kept it up. I went to college, kept up with the same behavior, partied during, like, from Thursday to Sunday, and went to school from Monday to Thursday or whatever, and did well, you know, and that was the thing that always got me, and that's what made it so hard to come in and into the rooms and to get sober and have some recovery was I kept getting away with shit, you know, and it was like, so what? You know, this is, it didn't have any meaning, you know, but it started to, especially right out of high school, I was recruited to a major university, you know, affirmative action, and that was Yale University, and I went there for 3 semesters and, you know, did the same thing and went to New York and went to Boston and did all this fun stuff and had boyfriends and, you know, just went on and on, and, but then I just didn't want to be there anymore. I wanted to come home, you know, a close-knit family. I came home. But I didn't, like, leave it behind. It came back with me, and it just became this like this club that beat me over the head constantly. You didn't finish. You're not good enough. And that's when I turned the corner and I started drinking to shut up that voice. You know, my drinking wasn't just fun and games anymore. I was deliberately trying to block out this anger I had out towards myself and everything. And I ended up leaving school, getting married, having a baby right away, and I just was progressing, you know, and I was progressing to the point where I didn't want to live anymore. You know, I was 32 when I got to this program. I had 3 kids. They were 7, 4, and 5 months. I'd been trying to control my drinking for like the last 5 or 6 years. I was sick, sad, sorry, and suicidal, you know. And I got here, and luckily I had a glimmer of hope. Because I used to do something, I didn't even know what it meant, but I used to get on the floor on my face with my hands spread out and just pray and just say, "You've got to help me. I don't know what to do," you know. And I realized that I couldn't do this by myself because I'd feel relief, but it lasts for like 20 minutes, and then I'd take my will back, and then I'd keep doing what I did. But I got to AA, and I was part of the we, and I was part of something bigger than me, and there was hope, and there was a lot of loving people here that reached out their hands. My first year, I had like 10 months, and then I relapsed because I was doing it like school again, you know, and I wasn't really doing it for me. I was doing it for the husband and the family and the kids and everybody else. And the second time around, I started doing this for me, and one of the coolest things that happened to me in my first few months of sobriety is I got to go to the international convention here in San Diego and help out. And I helped by translating because I speak Spanish, and I was in the Marriott Hotel with all these people from all over different countries, you know, in the world, you know, talking to them, sharing with them, telling them which way was what and all that. And you know, and it gave me something bigger to live for, you know. And I'd go down to the stadium, and here I was, you know, involved in this big conference, but I didn't know anyone, like, where to meet anyone and say, "Hey, let's sit together," whatever. So I hooked up with these people from Boise, Idaho, and I just hung out with them for the both nights. We'd meet at this one P2 or whatever, and we meet there and walk in together. And you know, that's one thing I'm grateful for, is being given the grace to be resourceful and just to do what I need to do, even though I don't think I can actually get it done or to do it. You know, it's to me, it's part of what the gift of the program is. You know, just having willingness. You know, having willingness to be willing. And that was a constant prayer for me, because there was a lot of things I didn't get. You know, I couldn't understand the big book. I had to read it in meetings all the time. I went to like 3 or 4 different meetings a week just so I could start to understand what it all meant, because I don't have English is like my second language, and my family's, you know, spoke Spanish for generations. So it's like all these words, I was like, what does this mean? But, you know, I stuck with it, and I learned, and I've used other forms the 12 steps, and that's helped me deepen my understanding. And what I like the most about my life now is the fact that given any circumstance, any situation, I can handle things just by getting real simple, you know, praying, you know, doing the third step, turning it over, and then just getting real quiet, you know, and things come. And that is such a huge change from the way I lived my life before. You know, I was just so tied up in knots and so fearful and just, you know, the sky's falling, basically. You know, and I was fear upon fear upon fear. And now it's like life happens, life's in session, like they say, but there's light, you know, there's a path for me. And that all came about because of, you know, my willingness and God's grace in you know, making these 12 steps, this program available to us, thanks to the leaders of this program. And just the willingness of other people to just point the way for me, you know, on the road. This past weekend, I went to a memorial for a woman that I really admired. She would have had 32 years in the program, and she passed. And, you know, I don't even think about death the same. It's like, what a gift to have had her in my life. You know, it's not like, oh, my God, she's gone or whatever. It's what a gift. And it was so neat because my world came full circle because I met her in South Bay, but I've been coming to meetings in La Mesa for, like, the last 5 or 6 years. So I saw people from South Bay that I knew from way before, and then people I know from La Mesa came to her memorial, too. So, like, there we all are, you know, and I said, this is my family, you know. A lot of times when I share in my home group, I'll get up there and I'll just say, hi, family, you know, and it's, I mean it, you know, this is my family. This is what nurtures me. This is what teaches me. I don't think I could, you know, say it any better than just to say, you know, this is where I learned about what real love is, you know. And it's not about, you know, keeping score. It's not about trying to do the best I can because God's watching. You know, I don't have to be good for God, you know. You know, God's inside of me now, you know, and it's just something that leads me. You know, it's an energy, you know, it's not this man in the sky, you know, and it's something that I'm just so grateful to have come in contact with and to have a conscious contact with, you know, and that's something that, you know, I can walk away and I do a lot of times, but God never does. You know, God's always there. So I don't know how much time I have left. You know, I completely off.
1 minute.
1 minute? Well, that's good. Thank you, guys.